Good afternoon, and welcome to On the Docket. I'm Patricia Salkin, Dean of Toro Law Center in Central Islip. Every Sunday at this time, we talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today, On the Docket, we're talking about problem-solving courts. Traditionally, courts were designed to rule along clearly delineated lines of judgment, guilty versus innocent, winners and losers, prison time and probation, or freedom. However, courts across the country, and particularly here in New York and on Long Island, are increasingly incorporating more and more holistic considerations and experimental treatment options into how justice is served. For instance, some courts now take an active rather than reactive approach to certain individuals accused and found guilty of drug charges and domestic violence. There's even a special court for veterans. To help shed some light on the history, use, and impact of problem-solving courts, we're honored to welcome Judge Andrew Krecha and Dean Myra Berman to the show. First, we'll start with Judge Krecha. Judge Krecha is currently serving as justice in the Suffolk County Supreme Court and presides over a specialized domestic violence in Supreme Court. He was first elected to the bench in 2004 as a county court judge in Suffolk County. Prior to his judicial career, Judge Krecha maintained a private law practice from 1994 through 2004 and served as an assistant district attorney in the New York County District Attorney's Office. Thank you for being on the show today, Judge.
My pleasure, Dean. It's great to be here.
No, thanks. So, Judge, can you first explain to our listeners what it's meant by a problem-solving court and how they differ from traditional courts?
Well, problem-solving courts is basically it's a newer approach to resolving conflicts that we see in our legal system. Traditionally, courts didn't get involved in the finding the solutions to cases, but rather served more like a referee or an umpire would, with two opposing sides battling it out. That's what our adversarial system was always traditionally about. Problem-solving courts take a different approach by seeking out innovative solutions to legal conflicts. In particular, in those kinds of cases that traditional courts traditionally or usually failed in, things dealing with complex social issues like substance abuse, mental health, domestic violence, that's where problem-solving courts have sort of taken a different approach. How do we fix the problem? How do we solve it? And it sort of draws off of some of the behavioral sciences and uses some of the proven methods there to effectuate change and adopt practices aimed at resolving what are now legal conflicts in our system.
It sounds like a really great idea and something that should have been around for a long time. So when did they start? I mean, most people haven't even heard of these problem-solving courts.
Well, you know, the funny part is they probably – a lot of people have been exposed to them but just may not be identifying them as problem-solving courts. The problem-solving court movement really began about 25 years ago in 1989 in Miami, down in Florida. There was a Miami judge down there who was just tired of the revolving door of justice of drug cases coming in and out of the system, the same people all the time. And what he did was he started the first drug court and trying to make a difference and change it so the same people weren't coming in and out of his court. It actually, the whole problem-solving court movement really has its genesis in the late 80s, early 90s. If people remember back to the idea of community policing, it was a newer approach to focus sort of on individual offenses instead of looking at just the individual case. What they tried to do is look at patterns and engage the community in resolutions to ameliorate the conditions that were like fueling crime at the point. So if you remember the broken window theory, if you fix the broken windows, everything else will follow. A lot of it was inspired through that. And what happened was the Miami drug court had successful results, stopping offenders from repeating offenses and things like that. And then it sort of engaged out to these community courts where Manhattan had one of the first community courts. And they were looking to solve problems that existed in the community and using the court system as a method of change.
And so, interesting. So it started in Miami, but can you give us an idea of how this has taken off around the country? Is there a movement for problem-solving courts? How many are there, and what's it like in New York and here on Long Island?
Well, first of all, if you look back to 1989, there was one problem-solving court. Today, you dial the clock to 2014, and there's just about 4,000 problem-solving courts throughout the United States.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and they really range the gamut. Drug courts are still the most prevalent court out there, and they're really a great model, and they've been a great model of success. There's about 2,700 nationally of the drug courts out there now, but we've seen lots of other courts have become very popular and really effective, like mental health courts dealing with litigants who have mental health mm-hmm. issues. We have domestic violence courts and lots of specialized domestic violence courts that really address those particular issues and problems. And as you mentioned earlier, the latest and I'll say greatest problem-solving court that's really been amazingly successful and has just skyrocketed in the last few years are our veterans treatment courts, dealing specifically with veterans issues. Here in New York alone, we have more than 300 problem-solving courts. We probably have one of the most prolific states dealing with the issue of domestic violence. Mm. In our courts here, we have 76 domestic violence courts throughout New York State, and dealing with a host of other issues, including a lot of drug courts here in New York. And on Long Island in particular, we have here in Suffolk and in Nassau, we have domestic violence courts that deal with criminal domestic violence cases. We have integrated domestic violence courts, which deal with families that are experiencing domestic violence and find themselves in multiple courts at the same time. So they may be in divorce court, they may be in family court, as well as criminal court. And instead of having three different judges handle, you know, five, six, seven different cases that family's involved in, yeah. the integrated domestic violence court happens to be the court I preside over. We take all those cases, put them one family in front of one judge, right. because really all of those different cases stem from the same underlying problem. In that case, it's domestic violence. So if you have somebody, a judge who's got an expertise in domestic violence, who's more aware of the situation and is getting a lot of information quickly, it can really help bring about a resolution to whatever's creating that conflict. And that's the idea behind problem-solving courts in general. Identify what the problem is, the underlying problem. Sometimes there are a multitude of problems, and try to address those. And then you have better outcomes at the end of the day.
And people don't get lost in the system.
Yeah. You know what happens is the old way of doing business was about processing cases. You know, we measured success in the judicial system by how many cases we disposed of.
Right.
We weren't measuring success as to what the outcome was. So it didn't matter what the outcome was. It was just that you got rid of the case. That's not an effective way to deal with conflict. What you want to do is you want to resolve things so that they don't come back into the system. You want to make people's lives hopefully a little bit better. You want to do justice. And problem-solving courts are really result-oriented that way. The focus is on a better solution, a better resolution, and hopefully what you have is more satisfied litigants at the end of the day, better justice, and quite frankly, judges are more satisfied with the work they do if they feel like they've been able to make a change, especially for the better.
Right. And now, actually, you gave us a litany of topics that problem-solving courts address, and I think those are the more popular ones. But I also read a while ago that up in Buffalo that there's a problem-solving court dealing with gambling, and I thought that was incredibly relevant given the push for New York State, or by New York State, to open up more casinos.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. There are a number of gambling courts throughout the United States. New York does not have any at this point. New York's specialized courts are in the areas, as I mentioned earlier, drug courts, mental mm-hmm. health courts. We have
One might be on its way.
Yeah, right. But it's possible, too, especially with the new casinos yeah. coming in. Who knows what's going to happen?
So how does a case get assigned to a problem-solving court? I mean, you can't just go in there and say, I want to go to this court. Your case gets assigned, and what happens? Somebody gets arrested. They show up in court. How do they get diverted?
Yeah, and that's a great question because the answer is it depends. It depends on the court and the issue involved. Mm-hmm. So, for example, drug courts are a great example. Drug courts are considered treatment courts. What that means is the focus is on treatment and addressing the underlying problem, which in that case would be drug addiction. In those cases, the defendant, the person who's charged with the crime, actually opts in and asks to be in the court, and will sign a contract with the court to undergo and take this new approach to resolving the problem. But in other courts, like domestic violence, the cases are actually steered directly into the domestic mm-hmm. violence court. So our criminal domestic violence cases are mm-hmm. all steered off into a part that specializes in nothing but DV cases, domestic mm-hmm. violence cases. And then there's one other way, and that is, of course, with like an integrated domestic violence court,
right.
where it's actually the courts making the decision after looking at all those multitude of cases that these belong in one place and to address one problem. So again, you know, the one thing about problem solving justice, it's not cookie cutter justice. So that's why I say to you, how those cases get in there depend on the underlying issue and the way the court's been set up to try to best address those.
Right. So let's just take the drug court for one example. In order to participate in drug court, is it true that you have to admit your guilt in order to be in the drug court?
Yeah, well, the way it works is you have to take responsibility right away, and you sign a contract with the court. Mm-hmm. And what that contract is about is basically, I'm going to go into treatment, I'm going to stop my drug addiction problem, and I'm going to address that. And the defendants come back, and this is true about all problem-solving mm-hmm. courts, even outside of the drug court. The idea is people take responsibility for their actions, do something to better themselves, and then there's compliance with the court. If you're compliant, you're rewarded. In drug court, for example, you're rewarded with a more favorable criminal disposition. Everybody wins at the end because a successful defendant will, you know, be better treated and a better outcome and less likely to come back into our court system again later on. I think that's sort of the key with problem-solving courts, the idea that you can make change, effectuate change, and for the better and for a longer term.
Well, excellent. Thank you, Judge Krecha. And please stay with us because coming up, we'll be talking to Myra Berman about how problem-solving courts are changing the way we teach and view members of the legal profession, and Judge Krecha will stay with us as well. You're listening to On the Docket with Toro Law Dean Patricia Salkin on Long Island News 103.9. Welcome back to On the Docket. This is Patricia Salkin, and I'm here with Judge Krecha, and we're talking about problem-solving courts. Today, we're also happy to be joined by Dean Myra Berman. Dean Berman is the Associate Dean for Experiential Learning and the Director of the Collaborative Court Programs at Toro Law Center. Dean Berman attended law school part-time while working as a senior executive of a not-for-profit family services agency. She's also been involved in undergraduate and graduate teaching. Dean Berman, we just heard Judge Krecha speak about problem-solving courts and some of the ways that they're changing the landscape of traditional judicial roles. So as a professor, how do you believe that legal education has been affected by these courts?
Well, a few years ago, I would have said that these courts had absolutely no effect on legal education. As a student, I just 10 years ago sat in the classroom and listened to my criminal law professor speak about the theories of punishment, retribution, deterrence, rehabilitation. And I was told that only the juvenile courts focused on rehabilitation, that the adult criminal justice system almost always imposed sentences across the board, the cookie cutter type of sentences that the judge spoke about just a few moments ago. And then about 5 years ago, we at Toro developed an innovative collaborative court program where students would actually go into the courtroom and see what was going on. But still, what they saw was typical. It was the kind of lawyering and judging that they read about in their textbooks and in their professional ethics courses. A client, a criminal defendant, has a problem. Their job as a lawyer, they were being taught, was to solve that legal problem. If they were a DA, they were supposed to put the guy away, keep him off the streets, prevent harm from the community. If they were a defense attorney, they were supposed to find the best possible deal to settle a case so as to get the most out of the other party. And these are fine lawyers. It's one particular way of lawyering, to concern themselves with the issue at hand, the legal issue. And generally, we were teaching our students to become these kinds of professionals. And that was until the first time I walked into a problem-solving court, which was the drug court. It was shocking. The prosecutor and the defense attorney were present, but they were silent. Instead, the judge was speaking directly to a young person who was making a routine appearance, having been transported to the court by his counselor at the rehab center that he was attending. His family was there, too. And the judge spoke with the family. It was an extraordinary experience for me as an academic and for the students as future lawyers. And it became clear that we at Toro needed to help our students become this new kind of lawyer. And this was a lawyer who collaborated with what we would typically call our adversaries. It was a lawyer who viewed his client as a whole, as a person with multiple and diverse issues, not just legal ones, as a lawyer who was really a counselor. We called them counselor all the time in the courtroom, but they don't really behave as counselors. We always use that word in court to refer to the lawyers there, but very few of our law students were being trained to become counselors at law. And the problem-solving courts opened my eyes to a new way of perceiving and training lawyers.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, and one that maybe Judge Krecha will comment on as well, because even in our role as counselors, we're not professionals in helping people with some of these difficult issues. And so lawyers typically don't come with a social worker background, with a medical background, yet we're trying to help these individuals. So what is the appropriate role for lawyers in this process and judges?
I think, Dean Salkin, what we're seeing is a whole shift in the way the legal system does business. And I think that's what Myra's talking about, Professor Berman, in the sense that with the need to really be on edge with the training, the legal training, because it's not just – it's problem-solving courts, of course. That's a big part of it. But what we see is, you know, things like mediation, alternative dispute resolution, those are all sort of ways of that are modifying and tweaking our adversarial system. Instead of this fight between two lawyer pit bulls in the well, so to speak, and may the best side win, the idea is, again, what is the problem here? How can we help? And, you know, serving a client doesn't necessarily always mean winning because it's not black and white. There's lots of gray areas. The problems that come to court are the problems that we see in society every day, whether it be crime, divorce, you know, other social issues that plague us. And the solutions aren't black and white in those cases. And if we're going to address and help people and effectuate change for the better, then we've got to look at the legal system a little differently. We're not throwing out, you know, hundreds of years of legal precedent or history. We're just taking a new approach. I like to use the word attitude towards solving cases, to helping people find resolutions to these legal conflicts.
One of the key words is that I think is operative in the problem-solving courts is collaboration, and it's teamwork. You can't have a problem-solving court without a team. And if I may, I'll give you an example of how Turo was completely involved in the creation of the new problem-solving court that is functioning out here in Suffolk County, which is the felony youth offender part that one of our Supreme Court justices in Central Islip proposed to the Office of Court Administration and was approved. No resources, no financial resources, no human resources were devoted to this court, and yet that particular judge, in conjunction with the law school, in conjunction with the State University at Stony Brook and the Social Work Department, was able to create a part where all of the resources, lawyers, social workers, probation officers, prosecutors and defense attorneys come together, and they formed a diversion team. And that team, from step one through the final step, which was the compliance phase of this whole process, works together to determine what kinds of programs are best for various criminal defendants. It's an alternative to incarceration. The recidivism rate goes down, as the judge will tell you, and the students, the law students, functioned in a way that combined all of the other very separate functions of attorneys. And they functioned as a holistic attorney.
What's interesting about this, too, and it's a great example, Professor Berman, is that, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen court systems and judicial systems throughout the 50 states experience heavy budget cuts. And there haven't been the resources there because of the economy and all. But it's funny, if you look at the growth of problem-solving courts, they've grown exponentially in the last decade, particularly in the last 5 or 6 years, the same period when we've cut back judicial resources. And the reason that's happening is because, like this court that we started in Suffolk, judges see and want the change. And they'll do it even without resources and without tax dollars being committed to it, because they'll find innovative new ways to dealing with conflict resolution. And that's what tells you that problem-solving justice, problem-solving courts, they really are here to stay, because when the judges are taking the lead in that and driving it, it's no longer just coming from the top. It's coming from the bottom, so to speak. When I say the bottom, I mean, you know, the soldier judges out on the front lines, right. You know?
So as we're modernizing and innovating in the judicial system, you know, it's great that Turo is taking the lead from an educational perspective and making sure that the next generation of lawyers is understanding and engaged with these courts. So in addition to the Felony Youth Offender Court, I know we had on this show Ken Rosenblum from the Veterans Clinic, and the students at Turo are in the Veterans Court. What else is coming up in the curriculum, Myra?
We have the problem-solving court course being added. And, of course, at Toro, unlike other schools where faculty, full-time faculty teaches it, we have an actual presiding judge of a problem-solving court teaching it, who happens to be sitting across the table.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say, who might that be? So, actually, yeah, this fall we're starting a course that deals exclusively with problem-solving justice, and we'll give, I think, the students some great exposure directly to the courts. But I have to, can I just add something?
Sure.
One of the things, I mean, I see Toro students in our court system every day, whether they're working as interns there, they're observing in different courts, or working in the clinic programs, and I think it's a testament to Toro and to its student body and the faculty there as well that they're getting that hands-on practical experience. Because let's face it, just as I'm talking about problem-solving courts are sort of the future of where the courts are going and that new approach, we need lawyers who are trained in that. And I think the Toro students are at a great advantage because they sort of hit the ground running upon graduation because they've already been in the courtroom or they've already had these experiences. And I think that's a must for training lawyers. And really the future of legal education has to embrace that.
And let me just add one final comment about our students, and I'm sure that they're similar at all law schools. They were shocked, absolutely shocked at this role that they were being asked to play in one of these problem-solving courts because they weren't taught that this was the role of an attorney, and yet they embraced it. They continue to work during their breaks. They continue to appear in court on behalf of the criminal defendants, even though they weren't getting any academic credit for it, even though they weren't fulfilling their pro bono requirement. But they moved into this from a narrowly focused view and perception of a lawyer to a new type of lawyering. So at the beginning, they were saying things like, this isn't my job. What's a HIPAA authorization? What do you mean I have to call Job Corps? And at the end, we got comments like, I'm rooting for our boys. We need to keep working together as a team. All three entities, the prosecution, the defense, the judge, we need to save our clients, our kids, and our communities. So this is a new, improved type of lawyering that we're teaching our students in a very different type of courtroom and with very different types of judges. And I think it's going to be very successful.
Right. I want to thank you, Dean Berman and Judge Krecha, for sharing your thoughts and commentary on this important topic. Clearly, legal education is changing and the system of justice is changing in a very positive way. It was wonderful to have you both on the show. We'll be back on Long Island News 103.9 next Sunday at 4:30 p.m. with another great episode of On the Docket. Until then, this is Toro Law Center Dean Patricia Salkin. Have a good rest of the weekend.